when I learned in yeshiva, I went in a very big yeshiva, and there were a lot of different rabbanim there, rabbis there, with different styles. And one of them had a style that I wasn't used to. He was very pompous. And he stood on ceremony. He demanded respect. He always walked around dressed extremely immaculately, even more than immaculate. It was almost flashy in terms of a rabbi. And it wasn't what I was used to. I was used to a much more unassuming style. Not looking to accentuate themselves. And he stood out in a certain way, in this style of, call it, I'm not sure what word to use, but he stood out, he accentuated himself, demanded his respect, and it struck me as a little bit funny initially. And I had a hard time, well, respecting it. We're talking about, that's actually the subject tonight, respect. But I had a little bit of a hard time respecting it. Until someone, one of the other Talmidim in the yeshiva, pointed something out to me. It was just an eye-opener. He said, usually when you talk about a Balgaiva, a Balgaiva is somebody who holds himself all the way up, and others all the way down. The more he can push himself up, and the more he can push himself down, the greater he is. So, but note something about this Rebbe. Yes, he holds himself in very high esteem. But note the way he relates to other people too. It's a very unusual sort of Baal Gaiva, if you want to term him that way. Look at the way he relates to other people also. He holds anybody else he relates to in very high esteem also. This was interesting. It was like, for me, I was ashamed that I didn't notice that initially, that it had to be pointed out to me, because I do consider that a failing on my part. But, no, I could just say this, maybe we could just close the window there, we have the air conditioning on, I'm sorry. Thank you, I'm sorry. But I was a bit ashamed of myself that I didn't notice that initially. But that was, it really put the whole thing into a different perspective. Yes, this was a man who demanded his own respect. But it's true, it was true. This was pointed out to me, I started looking out to notice it. And this was a man who went out of his way, showed extreme respect for Talmidim, young boys, teenagers. And he treated people with very, very great respect. This was a man who noticed, this was a yeshiva numbering not in the hundreds but in the thousands, this was a man who would notice if one of the boys who had something to do with him hadn't been around for a couple of days, he would take note. He knew that the boy was missing. He'd come to say, I worried about you, I know where you are. He would also object when boys would act in a way that he felt wasn't according to their dignity. It wasn't just that he demanded his own respect, but he demanded the respect, that the proper respect should be shown toward the Talmidim also. Now, so really I came to realize that this is not about normal terms of gaiva that we talk about superficially, but this was something of a different nature. This was a man who had a very, very high awareness of what the value of a human being is, what a Jew is, what himself was. And therefore he demanded his own respect, and just as much as he demanded his own respect, he was very, very makpid about ensuring that everybody around him got their respect also. In this show I like to keep questions for the end, so we don't, but I give time for it at the end. Now this is really just a preface to what I want to talk about today. I want to discuss the subject of kavod. The subject of kavod. Kavod, respect, is something that really has to be understood well, because there's a lot of misunderstanding about it. Is covet a good thing? Is covet a bad thing? On one hand, we're told you should show covet for everybody else. You should be respecting everybody else. On the other hand, we're told that if a person goes looking for covet, so the Mishnah Avos says, it's one of the things that Metzinus Olam and Olam. It can bring a person to spiritual ruin. So if it's a good thing, why shouldn't I look for it? If it's a bad thing, why should I go shoving it on somebody else? If it's bad, it's bad. What is covet? So, Rav Shlomo Volder said something interesting, and here we're slowly going to get to the point. We're going to show that yes, false covet is something negative. Real covet is basically what defines our existence in this world and everything that we're about. Rav Shlomo Volder said, in his Sefer Ali Shur, that one of the masters of Musa of the previous generations said, everybody needs covet. Meaning, everybody needs recognition. Everybody needs appreciation. Everybody needs it. He said that in earlier times they said that everybody needs a spoonful of covet every day. And the author of Slabodka said that if in earlier times people needed a spoonful of covet every day, in our times people need a plateful of covet every day. But everybody, this is an absolute rule, everybody needs covet. If you see a person who completely doesn't require covet at all, it will usually be a person who's not losing the form of a human being. A person who's complete, almost subhuman. But in general, everybody requires covet. Now here we come to a little bit of a confusing point, because a very famous thing we know many about great people is how they spurned covet. They didn't want honor, they didn't want glory, they didn't want recognition. How do we reconcile this with this axiom that the masters of Musa, who were very, very deeply attuned to the depths of human nature, that they said that no, every last person requires covet. It is essential to a person's well-being. A person really can't survive without it. So Shlomo Volber asked this question. He said, so how do I understand all the great people that they knew? We all know that covet means nothing to them. And the answer that he gave was, and this requires explanation, he said, sure, everyone needs covet. Also those great people need covet, but they give themselves the covet. They don't need it from anybody else. They get the covet from themselves. That was his answer. Very profound answer, obviously, but still needs to be understood. So in order to properly define what true covet is, let's just continue a little bit before we actually get to the definition, noting the different paradoxes and the different difficulties with the concept of covet in its superficial understanding. So first of all, yes, we are told you have to be mechabed other people. The reason I'm speaking about this tonight is because we're told that during the days of Sphira, the disciples of Rabbi Akiva passed away, 24,000 of them. Why? Because Ashalinagu covered Zebizer. They didn't relate to each other with the proper level of respect. Now, we'll note in parentheses that the authorities say that, doesn't say that they ridiculed each other, that they put each other down. No! These were conscientious people. They kept halacha. They wouldn't hurt another person, they wouldn't defend another person. It doesn't mean that they were busy insulting each other. No! If that's what it meant, it would say that. They insulted each other. They put each other down. Doesn't say that. There was something lacking. They did not relate to each other with respect. Meaning, they certainly related to each other civilly and politely and with derech eretz, but they didn't revere each other. They didn't hold each other in high esteem. Lack of covet. In other words, what we're understanding is, and this is really what we're told in all kinds of places in Chazal, Eizu Mechubed HaMechabed Sabrius, we can count in countless sources of Chazal commanding us and enjoining us, you have to be Mechabed others, you have to relate to others with respect. So again, the superficial understanding of that is that you have to act nicely to other people. You have to show people that you respect them. Meaning, in my heart, I'm thinking to myself, this person is really a piece of nothing, but I'm told that I have to be mechabed him, so therefore, I act towards him respectfully. I make a show. Is that what kabod means? You think very low of the person. You have a very low opinion of his. But you act respectfully towards him because he's supposed to be mechabed him. Is that kabod? And if you think about it, it's not even real kindliness, because people who won't see through it and they'll enjoy it very much. Fine. Intelligent people will see through it. So how are you supposed to go about this? Let's say I have a person who is a very intelligent guy, and I'll be able to see through any acts. How are you supposed to be mechabed? Is kavod meant to be something fake? Now let's take this question a bit of a step further. With regard to Hashem, right? We're supposed to be praising Hashem, and we're supposed to be honoring Hashem. In general, praising Hashem is something that we have a little bit of a hard time relating to. You know why? Because we think of it in the same terms as the kavod that we think towards other people. Other people, you flatter and he's pleased. Right? You tell him, you really think the guy is nothing. But you tell him, I think you're a wonderful guy, and you show him a lot of respect. There, he's happy, so you're yaitzeh. You're a mechabed him. With Hashem, it's a little more difficult, because David HaMelech is talking about praising Hashem. We spend every day 10-15 minutes on Pesukim and Zimra just praising. But what's the point? We're trying to make Hashem feel good? Is that the idea? You're busy praising Hashem, talking. Hashem needs you to make him feel good. The reason that we feel funny about this is because, again, if this is what it means to relate to other people with kavod, to make the guy feel good, even if you don't really mean it, it gets a little problematic once it comes to Hashem. The point to just make Hashem feel good, he sees more clearly what you're thinking than what you're saying. Because what you're saying isn't even really real. What you're thinking is really real. So, what is the idea? So here we have to take a bit of a step back and understand what kavod really means. Kavod is not a show. Kavod is not about acting nicely towards people. Sometimes you gotta do that too. Sometimes you don't have to be a good actor. You can't say, I'm just straight with people because I'm real and that's the real me. No, sometimes you have to be an actor too. But when you're being an actor, you have to realize that what you're doing is a technicality. You are not being mechabed another person. What is kavod? If we understand what kavod really is, we'll understand that being mechabed Hashem and being mechabed people is really the same subject. Or even more than that, we'll see that really being mechabed people is not an issue of being other mechaber. Being other mechaber is to make the guy feel good. If you can put on a fake smile and tell him all kinds of flattering statements, there, you fulfill your being other mechaber, but that's not kavod. Being mechabed other people is part of the subject of being mechabed Hashem. Now this is all still a little bit vague to us, because we haven't yet defined what kavod is. But let's go a little bit deeper now and just analyze the word kavod, and from there we'll come to approach what kavod really is and how fundamental a subject it is in our lives. Kavod towards Hashem, kavod towards people. So first of all, kavod is from the word kavod, related to the word kavod, weight. Everything has different characteristics. Any item has different characteristics. It's got its size, it's got its look, it's got its color, and it has its weight. The least apparent characteristic of an object is its weight. As soon as you see an object, well, if you have experience with the object, you can guess how much it weighs. Well, let's say you're seeing something that you never tried to pick up before. The easy thing to see, what hits you at first glance is the color, the size, all these things you can see. The weight, that is the least apparent characteristic of the object. That is, if we'll call it, a more hidden characteristic of the object. You try to move it, then you discover its weight. But before that, you have no idea. Can I lift it with one hand? Does it require a crane? So again, usually you can get an idea of these things by looking at something's weight, a size. But that's not always a gauge. So, therefore, you approach the object, you see what it looks like, you see what color it is, and now you try to lift it up. So you're figuring it's not too heavy. You come over and you kind of take one hand and you give a quick little swipe and oh, you sprain your elbow because it's a lot heavier than you thought. So you step back for a minute and you say, oh, I misjudged this object. I didn't really get it. You step back, now you think about it. How am I supposed to go about this? So you go back into the house, come out with three people, and you pick it up together. Now you're relating to that object right. This is covered. Now, it doesn't really matter to the object. There's no problem. If you thought it was lighter, there's no better than that. But he was starting to just, by way of a mushal, which is not such a mushal, because it's actually inherently related in the word, start approaching the subject of covering. When you tried to pick it up with one hand, you didn't have proper respect for that object. Meaning, you did not appreciate what it really is. You didn't appreciate that there's more there than you were able to realize. And therefore, you thought you could pick it up with one hand. Then you tried, and the object is still where it was, and your elbow hurts, and now you see, oh, I was relating to that object wrong. This object demands a lot more kavod on my part, a lot more respect. That's why it's called kavod rosh, to relate to something in a serious way. It's also kavod rosh, to relate to it heavily. What do I mean to relate to it heavily? To attribute to it its due weight. And the truth is, in English also we talk this way. When we talk about something as a significant, serious issue, we talk about it as a weighty issue. Right? It's got more weight to it. And therefore, now, when you're approaching it with three people, and you're rolling up your sleeves, and you're getting ready to sweat, oh, now you are relating to it with the proper kavod. This is what kavod is. Kavod means to recognize the true value of something that's beneath the surface, that you don't see, that's not readily apparent. That's what kavod is. And to relate to it in the right way. This is kavod towards Hashem. This is kavod towards people. This is kavod everything. To relate to something in the way that is not apparent on the surface, but that's really there, lying there beneath the surface. Okay, now let's start giving some examples. One simple example. We'll start with some simpler examples, and then we'll get on to the heavier examples, and how this really affects all of our life. Mamash. Take a Sefer Torah. A Sefer Torah, you look at it at first glance, what is a Sefer Torah? It's written on parchment. Parchment, okay, looks a little bit unusual, picturesque. But what is it? Doesn't look who knows what. Parchment is often not the nicest looking thing. Okay, the ksav, right, the script, sapphis is nice. It's calligraphy, a certain level of art there. But at the end of the day, see, if you were just accustomed to seeing a Sefer Torah as is, open, the way the Gemara calls it, naked, on the table, okay. It's basically a piece of hide with black ink. It's a little bit of a fancier sort of paper. Looks kind of more like a diploma than a regular paper. Fancier sort of paper. But the truth is that there's much more to the Sefer Torah. But the truth is that there's much more to the Sefer Torah than actually meets the eye, and our eyes actually see. There's Kedusha there. It has inherent value that you don't see with your eyes. That you don't see unless you know that it's there. But it's not naturally apparent. And therefore, what do we do with the Sefer Torah in order to bring out that there's more here to the Sefer Torah than we can see? What do? We wrap it in a fancy mantle or put it in a fancy elaborate case, and we don't keep it out in the open. We hide it away. We keep it in an Aron Kodesh. We make a big deal out of it. There are all kinds of halachas
when you bring the Sefer Torah to the Bima, everybody who it passes by is meant to accompany it. So we make a whole fanfare out of it. It's covered, everything around it is fancy. We create a whole aura, and person, outsider, sees the fancy mantle, the fancy casing, and he sees that there's a whole crowd carrying, following along with it. He understands that there's something very special here. A lot more special than he would realize if he just saw the parchment. This is kavod for a Sefer Torah. What's the kavod? The kavod is, yes, there's inherent value to the Sefer Torah, but that's not apparent. We are the ones who bring it out. We bring it out by being mechabed it. How we mechabed it? By acting towards it with reverence, by putting all kinds of fancy things on it. That's how, yes, we're humans. We just have physical eyes. We don't see the spirituality. We don't see the depth behind this object. We know it's there, though. And therefore, we do things that we can see with our physical eyes in order to be able to relate to it in the right way. So I hope that the parallel between this and the weighty object is now clear. Right? It's the same thing. You see a Sefer Torah, you think? Okay, you're not trying to pick it up. It's not the issue here of whether I can pick it up. But you see a parchment with black writing on it. No, you're not relating to it in the right way. You're not attributing the right weight to it. All of a sudden, when it's wrapped fancy, and when everybody is walking around it hush-hush, then it's got its proper weight. You attributed the proper weight to it. That's covenant. Okay. So now, let's take a step back and start understanding how this works with regard to Hashem. We're supposed to be mechabed Hashem. So as we said before, now we understand, kavod is not about making people feel good. So we'll get to people too. Kavod is about recognizing that there's a lot more depth here than meets the eye, and that I have to relate to that depth. I can't just relate to what my eye sees. And I have to find the means to bring out and to highlight the real depth that's behind whatever it is I'm related to. So now, Hashem, we always hear the expression of Gilui Kvod Shamayim. We're here in order to be Megale Kvod Shamayim, to reveal Kvod Shamayim. And now we understand exactly what this means. Hashem in this world is not apparent. You walk through this world, you don't see Hashem at all. Hashem is hiding. Hashem is concealed. Yet, He's everywhere. But it's our job to bring it out. How do we bring it out? A person just walks through this world and he says, this world is just about eating. There's food. We have a mouth. Let's eat. How do we bring out the hidden significance of the world? Aha. So first of all, we talked about eating. Everything that we do is an issue of Kvod Shamayim. Hashem gave us a very, very, very sacred task. He said, in this world, it's true. This world is actually my covenant is hidden. You can't see me in this world. It's your job to represent me. It's your job to bring out that I'm here. In other words, we are the ambassadors of Hashem in this world. So therefore, for example, you just talked about eating. You want to buy something in the store, something that appeals to you, and you check the hechsher. It doesn't have a good hechsher. And therefore you put it back. Why are you putting it back? The answer is because you understand that there's a Hashem here who's saying no. By putting that object back, this is something that you want. By putting it back on the shelf, you are bringing out Kvod Shamayim. The world is not just the world of free-for-all. There is hidden significance to the world. There's a Hashem here. And therefore, by putting back that object, that's Kvod Shamayim. You are revealing that there's deeper significance to the world. Now the truth is that that's just one example, but everything, all the mitzvahs that we do is about Gilui Kvod Shamayim. In the Galik Kvod Shamayim. If we talk more directly, when we say Kadosh, 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 say Kedusha and Shul, Nusach Ashkenaz, or Nusach Sfar, whichever Nusach you're using, you start, I'll use Nusach Ashkenaz because I'm more familiar with it. But what do we say? We start by saying this is the preamble to Kedusha. Nekadesh Shimcha Ba'olam, Keshem Shemakdishim Oisai B'Shmei Moroi. we are going to sanctify your name in this world, just like the Malachim do in the higher worlds. This is mind-boggling if we think about it for a minute. Meaning, we are prefacing the Kodesh, Kodesh, Kodesh that we're about to declare. We say in the upper world, Hashem is not hidden at all. Hashem's glory, Hashem's presence is the most obvious thing there is, and the Malachim are busy yelling, Kodesh, 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 the whole time. Now we here in this world, you can go through this world without seeing Hashem. When you pass by a shul, while they're saying Kedusha, and you hear the whole tzibur thundering, Kadosh, 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 you're hearing, oh, there is a Hashem. In other words, what we're saying here, it's our job to actually accomplish what's going on in the upper world. In the upper world, Hashem's covenant is resounding. It's clear, it's the most obvious thing. And what we're doing down here in this world, we're about to do our part in filling the vacuum. This world is a void. You don't see Kvod Shamayim. You don't necessarily see that there's Hashem. A person can go through this world without noticing Hashem. So we're going to yell, Kadosh, 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 there is a Hashem. In other words, we're bringing the world's hidden significance out to the surface by declaring, yes, there is Hashem. And this is relevant for every mitzvah that we do. We have to realize that Kiviyachol, we are the ones who are actually giving Hashem physical existence in this world. Hashem is not physical. This world is a physical world, and therefore you can't sense Hashem in this world. And when you grasp the magnitude of what we're meant to do, it's mamish mind-boggling. Hashem says, I do want to have physical presence in this world, but I'm not physical. The only way I can do it is through your physical actions. Yes, like we said before, that chocolate is very physical, and your desire for that chocolate is very physical. And when you hold back, why are you holding back? Because there's Hashem here. You have now given Hashem very physical expression. When you talk about Hashem, when you even just think about Hashem, you're bringing Hashem into the physical world. When you have Hashem in your mind, you've brought Hashem into the physical world. Your mind is a physical thing. This is what we're busy doing our whole life. Bringing Hashem into the physical world. Every mitzvah we do is giving Hashem physical expression. Every time we hold back from not doing the wrong thing. When we talk about Hashem, when we think about Hashem, we're giving Hashem physical expression in this world. We are representing Him in this world. And it's mamish literally, we are the ambassadors of Hashem in this world. This is why, really, everything that we do is really just an issue of Gilui Kvod Shamayim, revealing Hashem's kavod in this world. And therefore, also, when we talk about praising Hashem, we're not talking about making Hashem feel good. We're talking about expressing everything that's true but isn't seen. When we say Gadol Hashem u'Me'ulot Ma'ay, that's true even if we don't say it, just that it's not apparent in the physical world. When we say that, we are expressing that in a physical way. We're making it apparent in a physical way. And this is relevant for everything. That's what Pirsumei Nisa is about, right? Hashem did very great things centuries ago. And when people walk through the street and they see, as they're walking down the block, they see candles in every window, they're seeing that in a physical way. There, once again, is the covet of Hashem being expressed in a physical way. This is what Shabbos is about also. Right? There's so many halachas about covet Shabbos. Covet Shabbos. What's the issue of covet Shabbos? It's again the same thing. You wake up on Shabbos morning, it's a day like any other day. You don't feel anything special about it. But the truth is that the air is charged. It just can't be sensed with physical senses. But on Shabbos, the world is filled with an unbelievable light. It's filled with Kedusha. If we had spiritual eyes, if we'd be able to really see what's going on, we would see that the whole world is a much different place on Shabbos. But we don't feel that, because we're physical and we're in the physical world. But we bring it out. How do we bring it out? By Kavod Shabbos. We create the feeling that Shabbos is a special day. By dressing up differently, by preparing the house beforehand, by bathing. Any kid knows that no, Shabbos is a special day. Every kid already has that association. Shabbos is a completely different atmosphere in the house. Who created that atmosphere? You created that atmosphere. We create the atmosphere by changing the tablecloth, putting on a festive tablecloth, by setting the table beautifully. All this creates an aura, it creates an atmosphere. When you walk into a full house on Shabbos, you feel that this day is different. How? The day really is different. You don't begin to grasp how different the day is when you see that set table. But again, That's all not apparent to the physical senses. But we go ahead and we dress up and we set the table. And now we're making it physical. We're creating a physical atmosphere. Shabbos is a different kind of day. So what are we doing once again? We're taking the hidden significance of Shabbos and bringing it out. We're bringing it out to the forefront. We're making it obvious. That's coven. That's coven. Yes, there's something deeper here than meets the eye, and I want to bring that out. That's coven. Now, from here, you could probably guess how we're going to continue and start discussing being mechabed other people. Now we understand that being mechabed other people is not about making other people feel good. That's a mitzvah. Sure, it's a chashuva thing. Might fall under the category of chesed, but it doesn't fall under the category of kavod. Kavod doesn't have to be chesed. For example, like we said before, there are many great people who don't want the kavod. Where's paradox? There's a great rabbi. He doesn't want the kavod. He doesn't want everybody to stand up when he walks into the room. It pains him. Yet everybody is obligated to do so nevertheless. If the point is making him feel good, he's not interested. Skip it. But the answer is, no, that's not what covet is. Covet is our obligation to be able to relate to the kedusha of this world, to be able to bring it out. And therefore, no, when you see a Talmud Chacham, there's kedusha here. There's kedusha here. The Torah that he carries is something kadosh. You cannot, chas v'shalom, allow the impression to remain that this is a guy like every other guy. We have to bring out, this is an issue of Hashem's honor that's at stake here. It's not an issue of making this person feel good. It's Hashem's honor that's at stake. This man represents Hashem's values. For Hashem's values, we stand up. We don't treat the Talmud Chacham like we treat other people. We stand up, we show him reverence. He doesn't like it? Too bad, we show him reverence anyways. We continue relating to him with respect and reverence, even if he objects. Why? Because once again, he's carrying Hashem's honor. He's carrying something deeper behind the surface. And our essence of Jews is to be able to connect to the depth behind the surface. That's all we're doing here in this world as Jews. All we're doing in this world as Jews is to be able to recognize the world as a place of spirituality, where everything physical about this world is just a shell. But we really recognize the significance behind the shell, and that's what we're relating to. So therefore, when I see this man, I relate to him with reverence, because what's behind the shell? This is not just another old man. This is a man, this is a walking vehicle of Hashem's values. And this I relate to with reverence. It's an issue of Kvod Shemayim. Okay, that's as far as the Talmud Chacham goes. But what about a regular guy? Supposed to relate also to your Talmidim with Kavod. That's what it says. You have to be Mechabed your Talmidim. You have to be Mechabed your children. Now it's like no mistake about it. You say Kibud Av, that's a whole different level of Kavod. But we have a chiyuv to relate to every Jew with Kavod. Kavod Habriyos. A person's dignity is considered such a subject of paramount importance. Their Chazal made a lot of leniencies in halacha in order to preserve man's dignity. Why? Because here we have to understand what each man is. Each person is something much deeper than meets the eye. If you see a Jew carries a neshama. A neshama is actually an expression kiviyochol of Hashem. Hashem is revealing Himself in this world through this person in a very unique way. And you have to relate to the person as such. This is Tzelem Elokim. Somehow, when I see the guy, I can't imagine how, but somehow this person represents Hashem. And therefore, I have to relate to him with reverence. I have to relate to him with a lot of coming. Now, to truly understand what Tzelem Elokim is, it's obviously beyond our scope. But just to start, we mentioned this many times, we'll mention it again. To realize, when you see a person's body, you're seeing actually a very, very superficial and low level of who that person really is. Now the truth is, in order to properly appreciate, you have to start with yourself also. Here we get back to what Rav Shlomo Volba said before.
that the great people, the reason they don't require kavod from others is because they're mechaber themselves. What does that mean? It means that they're able to relate to their own greatness. They appreciate their own greatness. And this is something that we really have to be able to do ourselves if we want to really be able to be mechaber other people. As long as I think that I'm just a nobody, the other guy is also just a nobody. If he's a nobody, kavod is really just about making him feel good. But if we really start appreciating what each human being is, how much immense depth there is to each human being, I don't necessarily mean intellectual depth, I mean spiritual depth, depth that you yourself are not aware of. The Nefesh HaChaim says that the body that you know, when you look in the mirror, the body that you see is really just the shoe of who you are. You're a neshama. And neshama is kibayachol, a piece of Hashem. It's something that actually emanates from Hashem, becomes more and more physical until it ends up as your body. But your body is the lowest level. When a person passes out of this world, he experiences who he really is. He's his neshama. We'll put this by way of a mashal, just in order to make this a little bit more tangible. You have no idea who you are. When you look in the mirror, think of it in the following way. Imagine a person who's put under complete and put under full anesthesia. He's completely under anesthesia, except they left out his little toe. So he doesn't feel anything except his little toe. That he feels. Okay? So if you punch him in the stomach, he's not aware. But if you scratch his toe, he'll feel it. So as far as this person is concerned right now, his whole life's experience is his toe. What are the pleasures of life? A massage on his toe, sticking his toe into a hot bath. What are the problems of life? A pinch to the toe, someone steps on the toe, nothing else matters. Taste, food is something he can't relate to at all. He's out, he doesn't feel his mouth. As far as he's concerned, he is his little toe. Now, let's say you could converse with that little toe and you try to explain to the toe, you're not even beginning to feel who you are. When you wake up, then you'll suddenly feel what it means to exist as a human being. Right now, you define your whole existence by the experiences of your little toe. How much of us even notice our little toe throughout our daily routine? That's what you are in your body. In your body, you're neshama. You're a neshama. That's really what you are. When you came into this world, Hashem desensitized you. Hashem doesn't want you to feel your neshama right now. Hashem makes you feel only your body. Only your body. And therefore, you think that your body is all you are. You begin and end with your body. When a person is nifter, when a person leaves this world, he all of a sudden connects to his neshama. It's like the person waking up, the anesthesia wears off. All of a sudden, he really feels who he is. He really feels who he is. Wakes up. When you look at yourself in the mirror and you see your body, you have to realize you are seeing just the most superficial, the most external level of who you are. That's not who you are. You're something much, much, much deeper. And what is that neshama? That neshama is something of such a godly nature, such a divine nature, something we can't relate to in this world. We don't know what it is. But it's something that's very, very, very great. If we'll think about it just in our terms, just in our own terms, when you look at yourself in the mirror, appreciate the fact that you mean more to Hashem than the Milky Way. You are actually a dream come true of Hashem, Kiryach. What do I mean by that? I mean that almost in a literal sense. Almost in a literal sense. No Jew is circumstantial. Every Jew is a specific creation that Hashem designed because He wanted such a person in existence. Don't think that you exist because your parents happened to meet. Your parents were made to meet because you needed to come to existence. That's the truth. And Hashem has already been manipulating things for the last 1500 years or longer in order to get your parents in the right place at the right time to meet, because He's busy planning your appearance on the scene. Now this obviously gets very complex, because this is true for all the millions of Jews we know. But Hashem can handle complexity. And yes, He's been planning your appearance on the scene. He's been envisioning you, since the beginning of time, since before the world was created.
When he created the world, if you asked him why he was doing it, on one level his answer would be, because in 5,000, this world is a process leading up to 5,700 and some odd years, leading up to the appearance of so and so. I'll talk about myself, Binyamin Jacobson. Yes, I hold myself in high esteem. Binyamin Jacobson. But this is true. Chazal tell us, every person is mechuyav to say, Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam, which means that it's true. Every person has to understand that he was the purpose of the creation of the world. Now, Hashem can have a lot of purposes that can work together, but what he's saying is, I would make the entire universe for you. You have to look at yourself in the mirror and appreciate that. You have to also appreciate that when Hashem describes Bria Sa'ilam, it's a very, very, he makes quick, short shrift of the whole thing. Right? Hashem created the heavens and the earth, right? That could fill volumes and volumes, but Hashem's already on to the next puzzle. Hashem made earth, and yeah, he created plant life, and he created the seas, and he created moving very, very fast. Right? He created animal life. Plus, Pesukim are describing in a couple of short words what can fill volumes and volumes until all of a sudden there's a certain stop. Let us create man. All of a sudden there's a whole preface. And all of a sudden Hashem is using the plural term. Nase Adam, let us make man. Up till now, Hashem didn't talk about it too much. He quickly rattled off. He churned out a heavens, and he churned out a galaxy, churned out an earth, churned out plant life, animal life, etc., etc. All of a sudden, well, a minute, things slow down now. Because now is really where the big part of earth comes into play. The big part of the whole creation. Nase Adam. So Nase Adam. What's the meaning of the Nase? Why is Hashem saying it in the plural sense? Let's understand what the creation of man means. And again, this is not just Adam HaRishon. This is the significance of each of our creations. In a way, our existence is even greater than that of Adam HaRishon. Because Hashem was busy manipulating thousands of years in history in order for me to appear on the scene. Adam came straight off the cuff. But for me, Hashem was busy planning my appearance. For more than 5,000 years, he was busy setting things in place. Nasa Adam implies it's the majestic plural. In other words, what Hashem is saying, kiviyachol, in Hashem's terms, Hashem is a king. Right? Hashem is a king. A king has great resources. Hashem cannot, a king can obviously do, create, what your average guy can't. So Hashem is kiviyachol saying, I created the heavens and the earth, and plant life, and animal life, and yeah, that's pretty impressive, but that didn't really require all of my resources as a king. That I could do as a craftsman. I didn't have to be the great King Hashem in order to do all that. Yeah, we're talking in Hashem's terms, we can't do any of that. We're talking in Hashem's terms. All of a sudden Hashem is saying, one minute, from what I'm about to do now, the resources required, the capability required, in order to make a man, is like the difference between what an average carpenter can do and what you need the resources of a king to do. An average carpenter can take wood and put something together. When you need a multi-million dollar project, you need a king to be able to do that. Man, in relation, relative to all the rest of creation, any one of us, you have to understand that you are a creature, you are an existence of more complexity and of more significance that required so much more went into it than everything about the universe. That's who you are. You have to look in the mirror and tell yourself that. And this is actually a part of our chiyuv of emunah. It's hard to relate to ourselves this way. But we have to start getting more of again, respect, kavod. What does kavod mean? It doesn't just mean patting yourself on the back and saying, I'm a great guy, and I'll keep saying it until I start believing it. No. Kavod means realizing that there's much more to you, there's much more beneath the surface than you yourself can possibly appreciate as long as you're here in this world. You're not in charge, you have no idea who the true you is. And therefore, yes, you have to start relating to yourself with respect, with kavod. That's also why, for example, clothing are called kavod, right? Mani mechabdusa. Rabbi Yochanan used to call his clothing my kavod. Why is clothing covered? Because what's the point of clothing?
the point of clothing just to make sure that we're tzniyistic? If that was the point, at least us men could wear loincloths. Is there really a value in wearing clothing, or is it just an issue of style? We want to look good. The truth is, other Marishain thought the former. When he understood that it's inappropriate to run around naked, what did he do? He made himself a loincloth. And he made himself something to cover nakedness. But Hashem said, no, that's not enough. He made him robes. Hashem made him a robe. What was Hashem saying? The point of clothing is not just to be tzniyistic, not just to make sure that your nakedness is not exposed. The point of clothing is a lot deeper. Man standing undressed, let's say he's wearing enough to be tzniyistic in the most basic sense of the word. He's wearing a loincloth. But you look at man, what do you see? You see the most intelligent of beasts, a bold gorilla. Right? You see 180 pounds of flesh. When you see man like that, you might indeed get the impression that that's what man is. Man is basically an animal who's a bit more intelligent. That's what the atheists would have us believe. And therefore Hashem says, I don't want you running around like that. Adam HaRishon messed up. Before he did the chet, man's body didn't look that way. Man looked different. There was no way to think that man is really just a sophisticated form of animal life. But after he did the chet, his body became more physical. So he thought, it's just an issue of covering my nakedness. Hashem said, no. You have to maintain the dignity of man. What's the issue of maintaining the dignity of man? Clothing, that cover, that impression that man is really just another mammal. Clothing give a person a dignified look. Clothing represent more accurately what man really is than seeing a man without clothing. And therefore, on the one hand, clothing, which is our external, right? Clothing is just the outer shell. It's called our kavod. While the nefesh is also called kavod. Ulo kavodi. What's ulo kavodi? David is telling his nefesh, awaken. He's trying to inspire himself. Nefesh is called kavod because that's really what it is that makes you, that requires your clothing. Why do I need to wear clothing? Because I'm not just a body. Because I want to avoid the misleading impression that my body is all I am. There's an neshama there, there's so much more there. And therefore, to look at a man and think, oh, that's a sophisticated mammal, that's a terrible sacrilege. We cover that up. We wear clothing. We are mechabit ourselves. We're mechabit ourselves by showing, no, there's so much more to what a person is. Oh, if we understand this, we're starting to understand what it means to be mechabit another person. To be mechabit another person means that after you start appreciating some of these things about yourself, you start appreciating that in the other person also. You start seeing it in your children. You start seeing it in the people around you. The person next to you, and you start thinking of him, like we said, he's not just an annoying neighbor, but somehow or the other, you can't imagine how. But this person who I find so annoying, for Hashem, kibiyachol, is a dream come true. Hashem has been envisioning this person for the last 5,000 years. Really? Can't be. Must be some mistake. Not this guy. Right? But, no. A part of thinking Jewish is, a part of our emunah is, yes, understanding that when Hashem says, Tzelem Elokim, that's for real. Each person is a Tzelem Elokim. You have to look at each person around you, each kid, your little kids. Right? The kid who's getting on your nerves. Realize that once again, like we said before, just like we said that you are not just the result of the fact that your parents married, your kid is not either. Your kid is not yours. Your kid is not, alright, this is what came out, I hope for better luck next time. No, this kid exactly as he is, with all of his quirks that annoy you, are exactly what Hashem has been planning and envisioning for years. What's your job? You're entrusted with a very sublime job. Look what Hashem did. Hashem said, this is something I've been nurturing and planning and developing for 5,000 years, and I'm putting it into your hands. I want you to develop it properly. Yeah, you relate to all those quirks and figure out, there's no such thing as a kid with a fault, a kid with a problem. Kids are raw material. It's your job to figure out how to direct these things, how to shape these things. Raw material is often not going to be the ideal thing, you know, in its ideal form. But
things that we perceive as problems, this, that, realize that no. This is raw material, but it's something that Hashem has been dreaming of and conceiving of and been planning and envisioning. This kid exactly how he is, and Hashem took pains to make sure this kid comes out exactly as he is. Because that's how this kid will materialize into what Hashem was dreaming of. And therefore, and Hashem is saying, and I want you to help develop that, to help turn it into what I want it to be. Start relating to your kid with kavod. You understand that there's much more to the kid than you think. There's much more to your annoying neighbor than you think. There's much more to your Talmud that you think. And yes, you start relating to people with reverence. You start relating to people with awe. It's very hard to really maintain this feeling, because we deal with so many people all the time. But to practice, to exercise, find the time to focus on one person and to really think to yourself, this person is, in a way, the exclusive focus of Hashem. Because this person is something Hashem was envisioning for 5,000 years, and now it finally exists. Let me somehow try to see him that way also. Oh, and now we understand that kavod is not about making people feel good. Now we understand that kavod is about starting to relate to a person's real value. If you understand that, you understand that no, you can't just talk to people however you want. A person is something very, very sacred. And when you realize that as you're talking down to this person, Hashem is focused on this person, loving that person, and not only that, Hashem wants to see, what do you think of my creation? Right? It's like the famous story of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. I believe it was Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. But one time, he was on the road, he encountered a very ugly person, extremely ugly. And somehow, slipped out of his mouth, he said, "Whoa, how ugly." So this person responded, "It's not my fault, go to my manufacturer and tell him." So Shimon Gamliel got a start, he begged him for forgiveness. But what's the idea? The idea here is again, yes, to learn to relate to every person, to realize him exactly how he looks, exactly how he is. This is something that Hashem planned, that Hashem is enjoying, and not only that, like in the case of Shimon Gamliel, Hashem is looking at you and saying, what do you think of my Moishele? Whether that Moishele is your son, whether that Moishele is your Talmud, whether that Moishele is your neighbor. But Hashem is looking at you to say, what do you think of my Moishele? So you have to realize that when you're relating to a Jew, you're dealing with Hashem. You might be offending Hashem by relating to something that he considers a masterpiece, even though you consider it a complete failure. But he considers this a masterpiece of his, and he wants to see how you're relating to it. Start relating to Jews in this way. You understand that yes, being mechabed other people is not just an issue of being mechabed people. It's an issue of being mechabed Hashem. And not only that, but being mechabed yourself. Learning to relate to yourself in that way. Learning to view yourself as kiveyachol, a dream come true of Hashem, is also an issue of being mechabed Hashem. Yes, you had a question.
The Rav spoke about the rabbi of the yeshiva. He mentioned that he was demanding his own respect. So I was wondering how externally one would see somebody demanding.
What did I mean when I said that this Rebbe in the yeshiva was demanding his own respect? So first of all, I'll just give you one example. When I came back to yeshiva, I didn't come over to him right away to tell him. We're talking about a big yeshiva, a yeshiva with thousands of people. It took me a couple of days until I managed to get to him. He came over to me in the Beis Medrash and he said, "You're already in yeshiva for 3 days and you didn't come to tell me Shalom Aleichem?" That's one thing. But that's just one example. Or, if I would miss a shiur of his, I went to a once a week shiur of his. I missed a shiur, he asked me, he told me I missed you in the shiur. I told him I had to take care of something that day. You miss a shiur because he had a shiur of mine because he had to take care of something? Right? So, yes, he demanded his respect, but it came along with that sense of it's because you have to realize what the weight of everybody is. And he showed it that he relates to you with that same weight also. And my brother-in-law was learned in the same yeshiva. My in-laws once got a call. Again, this is a Rebbe in a yeshiva with thousands of kids. My in-laws once got a call. He just wanted to tell them how special their son is. So yes, the demand for respect came from a very keen realization of how great a Jewish person is. Therefore, he wanted you to relate to him that way, and he wanted to relate to you that way. Also, know he learned in a yeshiva that very much nurtured that feeling. But, okay, that's as far as that specific Rebbe goes. Any other questions? How does the concept of Ritzon Yishol Adam Zeh Kvoido? We say that honoring a person's wishes is called honoring him. How does that work with the Talmud Chacham who doesn't want to be honored? But we're required to honor him nevertheless. I want to put that question off for next week because I don't think I can answer it off the cuff. Any other questions? Yes.
In respect to the question, focus the possible the focus the on the fact he's selling our kid, or he is, regardless of how he is to you,
asking a very, very good question that I should have and meant to address in the shiur itself, so I'm glad you brought it up, and I'll address it briefly now, even if I would have remembered during the shiur, I would have addressed it more at length. Andrew is asking a very, very good question. So, is being mechabed other people simply relating to the fact that they have a tzelem elikim? Or does it mean realizing that each person has his unique depth and his unique characteristics and learning to relate to them? And the answer is that both really go together. Because, and this is a deep concept, well, I'll give this over as briefly as I can while trying to do it justice. When we say that each person is a tzelem elikim, yet each person looks different, it's because Hashem is revealing Himself through that person in a different way. Or in other words, each person is a complete new Tzelem Elikim in this world. And there are many aspects about that person that reflect his particular angle of Tzelem Elikim. And therefore the two really go together. Understanding that a person is a Tzelem Elikim means realizing that Hashem built all kinds of particular qualities into a person. That's why a very fundamental aspect of respect in general is realization that you never have a person fully figured out. This is one of the big machloikis that we have with the world of psychology. You never have a person fully figured out. You have to realize that. Because there's always more depth to the person, there's always deeper koichas. And therefore, part of realizing that this Tzelem Elikim is realizing that yes, each person has his own unique qualities, and it is worthwhile to try to make a study of the people around you to discover and identify those unique qualities, to respect them, and also when you're talking about people who are close to you, to help them turn them into what they could be. Sometimes a very unique quality can come across as a flaw. For example, a kid who's manipulative, right? And a parent comes to have a manipulative kid, he has a problem. How can we fight his manipulativeness? There's another way of seeing it. He's manipulative, that's in raw form. But actually, manipulative, if we'll term it otherwise, means a person who figures out ways and means of achieving what they want to achieve. It's determination. A person who's going to get to where they want to get. So instead of saying the manipulation is a fault that we have to figure out how to work against, you say, oh, this manipulativeness is actually a revelation of this child's divinity, that it's up to me to help figure out how to get the right direction. So yes, actually relating to every person's Tzelem Elikim on the more developed level means identifying the unique characteristics of each person. What's special about this person? What's special about this person that doesn't exist by anybody else? And relating to that. Okay. Nice, that's awesome.